Mark and Sarah,
call it a comeback.
Mark and Sarah,
been here for years.
Mark and Sarah talk about songs. Talk about songs.
Oh, yes, we do. We're talking about a lot of them in our latest season. Welcome to this second episode of Do Call It a Comeback here on Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, where we are talking about comeback hits and working our way to the definitive comeback hit as far as we are concerned. I am your co-host, Mark Blankenship, and I am joined, as ever, by the comeback so great she's never left at all, Sarah D. Bunting.
Give me one reason to stay here. It's this season.
Hey, well done. Now,
in just
a moment, Sarah is going to tell you which songs we're talking about today. But first, let me tell you what our ranking strategy is going to be. As we move through this batch of 15 songs out of our overall batch of 60, we're going to do up-down votes, meaning if I think a song is in the top 8 of this group in terms of ultimate comebackitude, I will give it 2 points. If I do not think it is in the top 8, I will give it 0 points. Sarah will do the same, and our Patreon patrons will do the same as well through votes that they have already conducted on a Patreon poll. At the end of the episode, the 8 top vote getters, top point receivers, we'll move on to the next round of the competition. And as a reminder, if you would like to be voting in these polls, you can join us at patreon.com/mastis. Now, Sarah, which 15 songs are on the docket today?
Oh, boy. We got a lot of heavy hitters here, starting with Give Me One Reason by Tracy Chapman, Got My Mind Set on You by George Harrison, Handle With Care by George Harrison and the other Traveling Wilburys, I Ain't Worried by One Republic, I Can See Clearly Now by Jimmy Cliff, I Found Someone by Cher, welcome back, girl, I Just Called to Say I Love You by Stevie Wonder, I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner, welcome back, Foreigner, from the Moist FM season, I'd Do Anything for Love, parens, but I won't do that, and parens by Meat Loaf, I'll Never Love This Way Again by Dionne Warwick, Is That All There Is by Peggy Lee, It Wasn't Me by Shaggy featuring Ricardo Rick Rock Ducent. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so. I've actually never heard it said out loud, so sure. I assume
Dussol.
Right, exactly. Something like that.
And wrapping things up, Just a Dream by Nelly, Kokomo by the Beach Boys, and Living in America by James Brown. All right, let's get things started with Give Me One Reason by Tracy Chapman. We do not have a clip of this because I feel like we have really dug deep into the Chapman songbook. And I also got the feeling that we were probably going to be engaging with the song again. I could be wrong about that, but I didn't pull a clip. Also, I feel like for our demographic, it's not necessary to pull a clip of this one.
I think that's fair.
Did feel like maybe there was some pushback from the Patreon voters about this song. Maybe I'm misremembering the comments, but I looked at the chart facts for this, and you know, she did have 2 albums in between the one that this is from and the big one, the Fast Car one. It wasn't a ton of time in between. But I feel contemporaneously like it was understood that this was a comeback in terms of charting and like visibility for her in her career, MTV wise, whatever you want to say.
Right.
So I get why people might be like, well, I don't know, that was kind of not that long a time. And I actually did not put it through, because I felt like other songs in this group were comebackier than this. I admit and own, like Drew Barrymore, I own the decision because I also feel like for my particular cohort, she hadn't gone anywhere. And that cohort was, you know, hairy legged college students, college feminists. So that could just be like a use case that is not universal, but I'd love to hear what you think and what you and the patrons did with it in terms of moving on.
Well, to me, I can remember being shocked to hear a Tracy Chapman song on the radio again, which obviously was Give Me One Reason. And a friend of mine, mm-hmm. were both like, we thought she'd stopped making music altogether. And this was because, obviously, the first album, self-titled album, Fast Car, Baby Can I Hold You, Talking About a Revolution, those songs were everywhere. They were really popular, especially Fast Car. And then the second album, Crossroads, less popular. And then the third album, Matters of the Heart, oh, God, complete failure.
Let's not talk about it because it was not good.
The only song on that album that was good was All That You Have Is Your Soul. And even that was only good in relation to the other songs on the album.
Exactly. Well put.
But then this song totally put her back in the center of the conversation. And in fact, this song, which reached number three, becoming her highest charting song, drove the album New Beginning to sales of something like 5 million copies. It was like the one song was responsible for everything because there were no other hits on this album. And the thing that you might be remembering from Patreon is one of our listeners did say, was this a comeback or just really a really slow album? And I think it's just a fair question because there were songs on this album, New Beginning, that I just, even at the time as a credulous teenager, was like, I cannot listen to a song called The Rape of the World. I just can't do it. And it was like 7 minutes long. That said, there were quite a few songs on this album, New Beginning, that I really, really liked. Including a song called At This Point in My Life, Smoke and Ashes.
Oh, love that one.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Just like sad and wistful and beautifully sung. But for me, Give Me One Reason is therefore an absolute great example of a comeback hit. It's also worth noting that she wrote this song right around the time she was making her first album. She performed it in concert in 88. She performed it on SNL in 89, but it didn't come out until 95. So it's interesting to think that she was sitting on this big hit for a long time and then finally recorded it for an album. So it's weird. It's like a comeback song that really could have been on her first album. And if the timing of things had been different, it would have just been her next hit, not a comeback hit.
Right.
Anyway, but it is, I gave it 2 points, as did the listeners. But, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what the journey is with Tracy on this one.
Mm-hmm. Cause it was fortastic in our last episode, which if you haven't listened to that, pack a lunch, put on a depend undergarment and get after it. Cause yeah, we had a lot to say.
Yeah. So, Sarah, I'm wondering how you feel about our next little tune, which I don't think we've ever talked about before on this show, which is George Harrison's cover of Got My Mind Set on You.
It is. We don't have a clip. This was a legendary video, of course. This
with all
is
the animal
yet another
head singing and whatever.
Yeah. And he's like very peacefully sitting in an armchair and looking like, you know, George Harrison-y. Another 60s artist reiterating in the 80s. And this album, like, I often don't remember with much clarity. Like, I remember having owned an album and what format it was in. But I don't often remember buying them or receiving them as gifts or whatever. I remember this entire shopping trip extremely clearly in the downtown of Summit, NJ at Scotty's record shop, getting this like immediately. This isn't my favorite song on the album, but it's really something. And for someone who was raised by pro Beatles parents and listened to a lot of Beatles LPs, like starting from being a very little kid, this was a huge fucking deal, this album, and that it was good and had a Beatles-y enough sound that it bridged was a big deal. And like the legal wrangling over My Sweet Lord aside, it had been quite a few minutes since George Harrison had anything in the top of anything. So this was my number one in this section, because I also think that if you go out on the street and you're like, name five big comeback hits, that people would name this, I feel. People of a certain age, anyway, yeah. Like boomers definitely would name this. So yeah, this, I waved it through no problem, but I'm not sure this is a universal experience. So talk to me.
Well, it is certainly true that he had not had a hit in a while. He hadn't been in the top 10 since 1981 with a song called All Those Years Ago, which is a song about John Lennon. that had Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr like in the backing band. And then,
do you like that song?
Yeah, I do actually. I think it's kind of
me
fun.
Too. Yeah,
like it's a very pleasant song that you don't really hear much these days, but that I like.
Yeah.
This was a number one hit in very early 1988, and it is the last number one song by any Beatle, which I think is interesting as a chart fact. And it was originally, the song was originally recorded in 1962 by a guy named James Ray. So this also just continues the tradition of the Beatles and other bands of their ilk covering R&B and soul hits that they really liked and making them pop hits. And all of that is just sort of the table setting to the fact that it was just a monster song, and it absolutely felt like a song that everyone was listening to constantly.
Yes.
When I was 9 years old in the January of 88, when the song was number one, it was everywhere. And there was absolutely the feeling of all of our parents were so psyched that the Beatles had another hit, even if it was just one of them. It was like, my guy is still doing it. And so it was one of those songs where like your teachers knew it, you knew it, because it was also on the Nickelodeon Nick Rocks video channel. So even younger kids,
of course.
Like,
yes.
Like younger kids my age knew it, our older kids knew it, everybody knew it. It was absolutely a monster comeback smash. I agree with you, and so do the listeners. So that is 6 points for Got My Mind Set on You.
Yeah, I have a feeling we'll be possibly in similar agreement, if not like same degree of agreement, if not on the positive side with our next one, which is Handle With Care by the Traveling Wilburys, which contained not only George Harrison, but also Mr. Roy Orbison, Mr. Bob Dylan, Mr. Tom Petty, who you watch this video and it's like, I think the oldest of them at that point was Roy Orbison, and he was in his 50s, I'm going to say, like late 50s. And the rest of them are all in their 40s, except Tom Petty, who was like 37, and they all look old. Like, it was just a very different time, and also these are all like outlaws, and Jeff Lynne has looked roughly like 51 for most of his adult life. I don't know what that is. He's just one of those guys.
Since he was 19.
Yeah. But we did, I'm pretty sure, get not pushback, but just sort of people in the comments on our Patreon just wondering like, well, how do you classify this as a comeback when it's a super group composed of dudes, many of whom had never gone away? And certainly I think Tom Petty, you would have to subtract him for this to count as a comeback. But I would like to hear from you on that. With some chart. But before we do that, I would, well, like, it's not the right word, but we're going to hear a clip of Handle With Care, and here it is.
Put your body next to mine and dream on. I've been fucked up and I've been fooled. I've been loved and ridiculed. In daycare centers and night schools, handle me with care.
I don't really love the Wilburys. Like, I like all of these artists separately. I don't love them stuffing Bob Dylan and Tom Petty and Roy Orbison into one break and making Roy Orbison carry it so that it's not so unpleasant. I will say that I do think this qualifies as a comeback because you had some guys in there who were not known to MTV watchers as much, and that this did, I think, give a boost to Roy Orbison, to ELO, Jeff Lynne. It exposed people to Bob Dylan, which, you know, mixed blessing. I guess it depends on your perspective. I think it counts, and I passed it through. And I would also like to say that I'm extremely grateful that we are not contemplating the execrable Tweeter and the Monkey Man, is one of the most unpleasant charting songs in history. I will not be taking questions at this time. Do not put the word Tweeter in the title of your song. I don't know why I'm still talking. What do you think?
I hate the song Tweeter and the Monkey Man. And I also hated the song Congratulations from this album, where it's just Bob Dylan nasaling his way through it. But the reason I remember how I felt about these songs is that this tape, I listened to it constantly and I would just always flip the tape over. When I remember playing in the basement, we lived in a split level. So I remember playing in the den, which was like under half underground in this house. Anyway, and just listening to this tape over and over and over again. And I would always grimace my way through Congratulations. But I loved Handle With Care. I loved End of the Line, which is the last song on the tape.
Oh, End of the Line is a really fun song.
Yeah, I agree.
I like that one.
And then there's a song in there called where they say the walls came down all the way to hell. And I liked getting to sing the word hell to myself at this point. So I think that I understand the argument that a super group is not the same as a comeback.
Yeah.
But I also feel that this is still a comeback because it did make me and many other people around my general age know who Bob Dylan was, know who Roy Orbison was. This was just this album was released several months after, Got My Mind Set on You was a hit. So it's actually part of the ongoing comeback of George Harrison. Tom Petty, of course, yes. He had Free Fallin'. Well, Free Fallin' was 89. But like Tom Petty was a big presence in the 80s. So you're right. We can subtract him. But for me, this is absolutely a comeback. And this album was a huge hit. It went triple platinum. And it just continued this 80s thing where all of the 60s bands and acts get to just continue to have hits. Now, that being said, because of the George Harrison song and because of a Roy Orbison song that we're going to be talking about later, this one is third among that group. And that is why I did not pass it through. However, the patrons agreed with you. And so the song does get 4 points.
Okay.
So the commenters who didn't think this song should go through were not part of the silent majority who clearly did.
Okay. Good 60s to 80s reference, actually. Well played.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Next up is I Ain't Worried by OneRepublic. We do have a clip, but I think that I like played the song and I was like, oh, it's this. I just didn't know what it was called. But I also didn't really have any background facts on what would have made it a comeback. So do you want to talk about that now or shall we hear a clip first?
Let's hear the clip because I do have plenty of facts for this particular tune.
All right. What a fun song.
I know.
I was so not mad to be bugging out to this. You and I are both just chair dancing. I was remembering, because it's from Top Gun Maverick, so I was like remembering the like bits of video that are in the video or the bits of the movie that are in the video and just thinking about how this is not just a comeback maybe, but also like a throwback to that golden age of we only know the song so well or we only know a movie based on the snippets that we saw in a video.
Yes.
From the movie soundtrack. Like, what do we know about Vision Quest? Nothing except from these Madonna videos. Anyway.
That's exactly right. Oh my God.
I did not pass this through, but it's just, this section was really like, I would have passed like 13 of them through probably, but you had to draw a line and this fell below my line.
Yes, so I didn't pass it through either, but I do think it's an excellent example of a comeback, and I wanted to include it in the conversation because it's really new. It just was a hit in 2022.
Yeah, last year, right.
So OneRepublic had not had a top 10 hit before I Ain't Worried since 2013 with the song Counting Stars. And in between Counting Stars and this, they released two complete studio albums, and neither of those albums produced a single top 40 hit. So they definitely were like going the way of the dodo. And then when the Top Gun Maverick soundtrack came out, Lady Gaga's Hold My Hand was the one that was positioned as the big single. And I Ain't Worried became an organic hit through streaming. And then radio picked it up and it reached number six, and it went platinum in the United States. And I just thought that was really cool because it was one of those examples where the public, through the power provided to them by streaming, decided that something was a hit, and then the rest of the industry agreed with them. And I just think the return of this band is just, again, like, it's a delight to me because I really thought that it was over for OneRepublic. When a band releases two albums and cannot get a single top 40 song out of either one, that's not great. But then suddenly, here they are. The song was number six here. It was number three in the UK. It was like a big hit all over the world. And Ryan Tedder wrote the song Sucker by the Jonas Brothers, which is going to be talked about later this season. So Ryan Tedder knows from comebacks. And though I did not pass it through, you didn't, and neither did the patrons, I do think it's worth noting that it's pretty cool that this band made this really fun, light, breezy song, and it just became another hit for them sort of out of nowhere. And I don't expect that it's going to generate a new string of hits for OneRepublic because they've always been a rather faceless band. I don't know that there's a personality there that we can latch ourselves onto and get excited for their next great album or whatever, but it's cool that sort of out of nowhere, they scored another big hit almost 10 years after the fact.
Well, both this and Counting Stars suggest to me a certain aptitude for generalist songs that would be well used in clip packages before a big sporting event.
That Ryan Tedder is perfect. He's very skilled at making that type of song. You've got to have you've got to have something that's playing while they're cleaning the field during the seventh inning.
Yeah,
you put on a OneRepublic song. Or he also wrote the song Halo by Beyonce, which is the perfect song when it's time to get out of the club. Just Ryan Tedder is giving us songs that we need to grease the wheels of our social interactions.
We do. And I can see that clearly.
Oh, now you can. Hey.
Yeah. We do have a clip of this next one from the Cool Running soundtrack. I can see clearly now, which is a cover by Jimmy Cliff. I have a clip and here it is.
I can see.
I don't know, man. I mean, here's where I'm at with this. First of all, I actually like the original better.
Mm-hmm.
I think, ironically, it is more reggae than this. I also think that this is maybe not so much a comeback as a finally got here via an unusual route.
Yep.
Because Jimmy Cliff, I mean, if you don't know Jimmy Cliff, I could have named four or five Jimmy Cliff songs before this one. I don't think I even knew that he covered this and it charted, honestly, until we started researching this season. But I'm also one of those nerds who went to a rep theater to see The Harder They Come, which was like a kind of semi-documentary movie starring Jimmy Cliff. And it's like about the story of a guy. And basically, it introduced reggae to the United States via this film like 50 years ago. I don't think this is an especially good Jimmy Cliff vocal. Like Many Rivers to Cross, listening to Jimmy Cliff sing that is to hear the sweep of history. And then this is just kind of this goofy, like, it's the Jamaican bobsled team, like, we all, whatever, it's fine, it was a good movie, I saw it in the theater also, but like what are we, like, this is why we know who Jimmy Cliff is now, to like 20 or 30 years after he was really doing a lot of stuff. So I mean, I just don't think it's quite a comeback. And the other problem is that this is a pretty narrow, not restrictive, but like reggae is like reggae. It's genre pop. And there's like the way that that interacts with the pop charts, I don't feel confident in like looking at the same numbers that you, Mark, are looking at and making an assessment as to whether this is a comeback or an or just a come. Like, hi, nice, like an introduction. Nice right. to meet you. I'm Jimmy Cliff. I've been legitimately famous among reggae snobs for a, you know, a generation. So I did not pass this through, but if he had ever had anything else that charted, I would be talking about it day and night because I think he is a vastly underrated, underdiscussed artist of the 60s and 70s, but I'm done talking about it for right now.
What'd I think that to the chagrin of reggae fans, this is the only song that I could possibly identify by Jimmy Cliff. And if I remember at the time, I assuming he was just a new artist, like, oh, because I found out later he had had a song that charted at number 25 in 1969 called Wonderful World, Beautiful People. I don't know that song. I don't know anything about.
That's also kind of not that great of an exemplar. You probably know more songs by him than you think you do. You just thought they were Ziggy Marley.
Oh, well, I mean,
this happens.
Possibly. I just really don't know that much about reggae. And so, yes, songs that I may know. So the point being, I agree with you that it's more like Jimmy Cliff just had a fluke hit. And though he had reached number 25 decades before, I don't think it quite counts as a comeback. As more as just a fluke of a guy who's been out here doing his thing, has this random moment where he suddenly crosses over with the Jamaican bobsled movie, which is just so crass that they, of course, got a reggae star to cover this song for that movie. Like, but honestly, that movie was pretty funny. John Candy, RIP. So for me, like you and like the listeners, that's a zero. So no points for I Can See Clearly Now.
Yeah, but, you know, hit us in the comments if you have favorite Jimmy Cliff tracks, because, like I said, I feel like people should be talking about this guy more. He had a wonderful instrument and made a lot of really thoughtful music. Now, speaking of thoughtful, we have expended many thoughts on Cher, and we are about to expend some more, because it's her second comeback in this season, but chronologically, this one came before the previous comeback that we talked about last week.
Whoa, up is down.
Yeah. Did you follow all that? No? Well, we have a clip, and it's of I Found Someone, and I hope the someone that you find is an astrophysicist who could straighten out this timeline, because it's way beyond me. Here we go. Talking about the I probably didn't need to clip this. I'm not sure what's going to end up happening to this particular Cher joint. I just wanted to put it in because we talked last week about the auto-tune forward nature of Believe. And I was struck listening to this again. It had been a while since I heard it. And the vocal on this is like, it's not perfect, but she did not hold anything back. Like, nope. She left everything on the field is A. B, I also watched the movie, her boy, what was his name? Not Bacalari. Rob Camerari Bacala.
Yeah, that guy.
You know what I'm talking about. Who was in the video, his hair is so tall and jersey, and it was sending me. Like, I never thought he was hot. Like, at the time, I was like, oh my God, he looks 12. He doesn't. He looks like a, you know, not a minor. She looks fantastic, obviously. This is like peak Cher, no body fat, giant, huge pile of extensions on her head. Like, she just is this unbelievably weird Barbie, and I love her.
Yes.
And he is hot, and they have great chemistry, and I don't think I had much use for this at the time, but A and a million pluses for this now. I love it.
A and a million pluses.
A and a million pluses. Oh, also I put it through.
This is such a fucking great song. It reached number 10 on the Hot 100 in 1987. This was the first music of any sort that Cher had released since 1982, and it was her first top 10 hit since Take Me Home in 1979. So it really was a comeback. It had been 8 years since she had been in the top 10. Then she, in the year of 87, this song came out and Moonstruck came out. So 1987 was a very good year for Cher. This song also precipitated her entire pop rock era, which included If I Could Turn Back Time, which included Just Like Jesse James, which included the song with Peter Cetera.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, honestly, so fucking good. And I don't really give a shit that I passed through a Cher song last week. I passed this one along as well.
Oh, because, yeah, so did I.
Yeah, I mean, as clearly we both did. But it's like, you know what? Because this shit is great.
Yeah.
And
if her whole brand is comebacks, because it kind of is, if you think about it.
I mean, she just keeps coming back, and it's, there's that old joke, like cockroaches and Cher are the only thing that will survive the apocalypse. That's right. So just, it's fucking great. And Michael Bolton co-wrote this song, which I just think is delicious. And in doing research for this song, was learned for the first time that Michael Bolton co-wrote a song called Forever by Kiss that reached the top 10 in 1990. So Michael Bolton's got a really interesting career that includes a lot of different genres. Anyway, and his secret passion, the arias, but that's neither here nor there. So the patrons did not pass through I Found Someone, which I feel like might be because people were thinking, I'll just save all my Cher votes for Believe. But you and I are both in agreement that there's no such thing as too many Cher votes. So that's 4 points total for I Found Someone.
Great. I just called to say that I just called to say I love you is not a good song. And no. I'm sure Stevie Wonder would tell you that also.
Even though it won an Oscar. Sorry, boo.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as bad as you remember, but given how bad it is in your memory, that's not really saying a lot.
God, that's exactly
I don't
right.
have a clip. I was obliged to pass this through, though, because my contemporaneous memory of this song being popular, which I think I was in 6th or 7th grade, was that I knew that he'd been famous for 20 years before this, at least, and was a child prodigy and had been on Ed Sullivan and had all these wonderful soul hits that charted on the pop charts that were vastly superior to this. And we've talked about some of the 70s stuff. It hadn't actually been that long since he had a hit, but this was an absolute stomped the yard when it was popular. It was everywhere. It is a nicer vocal than I remembered it, but that's not it's not about whether I like the song in my voting, and it's not even about being very disappointed that this was a lot of people's introduction to this genius whose work I love, and I would rather listen to even the crappiest 60s and 70s Stevie Wonder than ever hear this again. But I think it counts. But it was right on the line. It just sort of, stacked all its saccharineness on top of itself and clambered into the number 8 spot for me. What did you guys do?
Well, the listeners agreed with you. They passed it through as well. Now, I do take the point. This is kind of like in that Madonna conversation we were having last time, where Stevie Wonder was at a different echelon. So in the 80s, and this song was a hit in 84. He had only had two other top 10 hits in the 80s, Master Blaster in 1980 and then That Girl in 82. And those songs were hits, but this is the song that reoriented him as a major force in the 80s. Mm-hmm.
This is why he's in We Are the World.
Yes.
Is because this happened.
And those other two songs, yes, they were hits, but this is the one that put him at the center of the conversation again. This song is the reason he was in that episode of The Cosby Show.
Yes, that's a much better example.
But it is the reason he was in We Are the World. And then you think about in 80, this song also then led to Part-Time Lover, which went to number one in 85. Mm-hmm. And That's What Friends Are For in 86, which he was on. Like, mm-hmm. this song is really what made Stevie Wonder relevant for yet a third decade in a way that the two earlier hits of the decade had not. That being said, there were just other songs that to me really epitomized the notion of a comeback more profoundly than this one. So I
totally
did not put it through, although I understand and support why you and the listeners did.
So this is a four.
This is a four.
Oh, God. This is happening again, guys. We got to start drop kicking some shit one direction or the other.
Splitting the votes.
I have, I don't know. I've had this feeling before in this episode, and I've been wrong. Our next song, which we don't have a clip of because we talked about it pretty extensively in the Moist FM season, is I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner. I don't know. Like, first of all, we may be talking about the wrong Foreigner song. I think maybe a slightly later song might make more sense to talk about. But it feels like this is another one that, for me, because of the way radio was in the New York area, stuff that was like at the beginning of the decade that whatever the comeback hit was at the end of, you were still hearing it all the time.
Right.
So we were still hearing like urgent all the time on rock radio. With that said, does this one count because it is kind of a departure? It's sort of like this is the Michael McDonald Foreigner and the stuff from the 70s, like Hot Blooded, like where he's basically like every single noun in the song is talking about his dick, including like ashtrays and doors and shit. And you're like, oh my God, we get it. You're horny. It is a different way. It is a different, like, it's a different, more reflective, romantically bonered Lou Graham. Does that count towards it being a comeback? Possibly. And if this is how people voted, I support it and I endorse it. But I had this like dead last in this particular field and did not pass it through. What about you?
Well, I agree with you because, first of all, this was the first single from their follow-up, from the album that followed up Four, and that was the album that had Waiting for a Girl Like You on it. So They basically had, there was no time between albums with massive hit singles. And I would argue, too, that Waiting for a Girl Like You introduced us to the sound that I Want to Know What Love Is just expanded upon. So yeah. This is the only song in our entire season that I'm like, why did we pass? I can't remember why we put this on the list. Because to me,
I can't either.
This to me is actually not a comeback hit at all. In any, I cannot find a way to call it one. So I would say not only is this my last place of this episode, it's actually 60th for me of the entire season.
Yeah, I think maybe we either needed to, I think there were some later hits like in 88 that like they charted high enough that maybe we could have counted those. But I think it's like a matter of degree, but the same argument.
Yeah.
And maybe when did Midnight Blue come out? Because maybe our problem was that we should have just made it Lou Graham.
Oh, well, yeah, I know.
But I mean, nobody's voting for Midnight Blue except me and Soika's Painoot because we love that song, but
Midnight Blue is a banger. You're going to get no argument from me about
Fantastic.
Midnight Blue. Such a great song. So the patrons, however, did put it through, which I found surprising. But you know what?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's only 2 points, though, for I Want to Know What Love Is. At least it's not a four. At least there's that.
Okay.
Now, talking about comebacks, just four times I had to say it. To me, that is what I Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That is. It was suddenly Meatloaf was fucking everywhere again with the Bat Out of Hell 2 Back into Hell album. This song, I Do Anything for Love, was number one for 5 weeks. He hadn't so much as had a fart that people cared about in like a decade at this point. And like suddenly he's just like the fucking top of the charts and he having the biggest hit of his entire career. Like, obviously, this album wasn't bigger than the Bat Out of Hell album, which is one of the biggest albums of all time, but the song is the biggest hit he ever had. So to me, this is hands down, unequivocally, a comeback hit personified, and it was an easy pass-through for me.
It was for me as well. I did not clip it because I despise it, but you can't argue with anything that you just said, and I won't. I don't think I realized just how late this came out. Like, I thought it was like 5 years before it actually came out, but it was like a significant amount of time. It was far and away his biggest hit. Literally nothing had occurred. Like, this is not a neighborhood play at all. It was like Dashboard Light, like Sound of Wind, Tumbleweeds, this one.
It's seriously.
And yeah, I mean, are they the same song? Possibly. Do we need to calm down with the parentheticals? Yes, we do. Did I enjoy his work in the Spice Girls movie as their tour bus driver? Best thing he ever did. Like, we're going to have to contend with this song for a while longer, I have a feeling, but I can't, like, there's no criteria by which you can say this is not exactly what we're talking about. So I passed it through as well.
I did too. And so did the listeners. It's a 6 for this song. And because how could it not be?
Yeah,
and also,
honestly,
like, it kind of precipitated the brief return of Jim Steinman, because Nikki French had a dance remake of Total Eclipse of the Heart shortly after this. And then Celine Dion had one of her all-time masterpieces with Jim Steinman's It's All Coming Back to Me Now a few years later. So Meatloaf not only brought himself back with this song, he brought Jim Steinman back. That's like a double comeback.
Yes, an auxiliary Yvonne Elliman on this very podcast is Mr. Jim Steinman.
Oh my God, seriously.
He's got a brand, that's for sure.
I'll just say this up front, and to be honest, eventually I'm going to have to start not voting through songs that don't bring me joy. Like, yeah. I cannot in good conscience just use logic to dictate my final choices, but I can still put this through to the next round because it would be ludicrous to pretend like it didn't belong.
Well, and here in the early rounds, it's like, all right, let's talk through what we really mean.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into it. And there's just going to be some songs that we hate, but that we still can't argue. So,
yeah. And I wouldn't even say that I hate this song, because if when it came out, I was at the exact right age where I just accept it. I accept this song, even though I do not like it, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely do.
Next, we have Dionne Warwick's I'll Never Love This Way Again. It was number 5 in 1979, co-written by Will Jennings, who wrote My Heart Will Go On and Tears in Heaven, both Record of the Year winners that we've talked about in earlier seasons.
Reluctantly.
It was Ms. Warwick's first top 10 hit in 5 years since Then Came You, her hit with the Spinners. And it also represented a big shift in her career into that smooth R&B adult contempo sound that she would mine all the way through That's What Friends Are For. Do we have a clip of this?
We do. Let's hear it.
Yeah.
I've kept the memories one by one since you took me in. I know I'll never love this way again.
When I was little, and this was popular, I guess I was 5 or 6. I heard it as I'll Never Love This Square Again.
Sure.
Because I heard it, like, as I heard a lot of music in the house. If we didn't have the album, I heard it on the tinny, like, clock radio that was in the kitchen. We were all like, whatever, getting ready. And what I heard was, I'll never love this square again. And I was singing along quite lustily in the manner of first graders who have not yet learned to feel shame about being dramatic while there's like Raisin Bran in their cardigans. And my parents are like, what did you say? And I was like, I'll never love this square again, from the floor where I had dramatically collapsed.
Yes.
And they're like, why would you have loved a square in the first place? I'm like, you know, a town square where you're never going to return. And I had this whole like backstory for it. 6 years old, by the way.
Of course.
My parents are like, get in the car. Weirdo. But then Forever is just one of those, like, not everyone hears it that way. I'm sure I was the only one who heard it that way. It's not like, excuse me while I kiss this guy, Jimi Hendrix, like, spoonerisms that people mishear. But I've always had a fondness for the song, and it has been sung to me in exactly that way many, many times. With all of that said, did I vote it through? Yes, I did. It wasn't like top of the list for this section, but I did feel like this was kind of analogous to the Aaron Neville song that we talked about last time, in that it was like, why had it been so long for her? But, and it wasn't actually that long, but there was an adaptive aspect to the comeback that you talked about before we heard the clip that I think definitely qualifies it. And I think there's something to be said for if the comeback is also, not that the song is known for being a comeback hit, but that the song is like, it's the American Idiot principle, that the song is like the sound that would be, as I put it in my notes, which is a horrible thing to write because God forbid the universe hears me and I'm just going to knock some wood, but this would be the lead in the obit kind of song. Like, actually it would be, that's what friends are for, but this sound is, I would say, her sound versus Walk On By, which will also be mentioned, but not until paragraph two.
Right. I agree
all this
with
by
you.
Way of saying I put it through.
Also, this song was produced by Barry Manilow. And when you know that, it's the most obvious thing. You're like,
it
course it was.
You're like, oh, like there's like a literal clicking sound in your brain that you're like, right, got it.
Well, and also this song was the lead single from her first album on the Arista label, which is the Clive Davis label. So obviously Clive Davis doing with her what he did with her cousin Whitney Houston, which is taking a very gifted soul singer and putting her into an adult contemporary mold to make her more appealing to what Clive audience determined the white audience wanted and frankly was very often right. So this is like Dionne Warwick being transformed into an Arista Clive Davis Barry Manilow artist, but being so fucking talented that you're happy to take the journey, just like with Whitney Houston. Although unlike with some of those Whitney Houston ballads from the 80s, I actually think that this song is good. It's not just the power of the performance that makes it good. I think actually the song is good too. Right. I love this song. I think it is so dramatic and fabulous, and I just want to be wearing gold lamé when I listen to it.
Like in bed, like that, gold lamé, but also bunny slippers.
Yes, that's exactly right. Gold lamé turban, bunny slippers, box of Russell Stover's chocolates. Done.
Yes. Which you drizzled with vodka and are eating with a fork. That sounds delicious.
God.
Be right back.
My weekend plans have just been made. Thank you so much for the very helpful. So I also put it through. The patrons did not. I have to believe, now I don't know, because obviously we have a wide range of ages in our listenership, but I just have to believe that maybe people don't remember that this song is amazing. Look, I don't know why, but we both put it through. And here's the thing I will say. If you have not seen on HBO the Dionne Warwick documentary, do not waste your time. Do not waste any more time. Go see it right now. It is one of the best music documentaries I have seen in years. The Dionne Warwick documentary must be seen.
Agree.
Oh, okay. Well, now, next
is... Is that all there is? Well, no. I think that might be all there is for this song in this season. But we're talking about Is That All There Is? ? By Ms. Peggy Lee. Let's hear a clip of this weird song.
Yes.
When it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to the circus? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball.
I mean, sure, let's do that, but let's not do that this season because I don't know. I just didn't know what to do with this. It just missed the cutoff for me. I didn't put it through. Peggy Lee had been churning out hits like before that, like they made charts basically for her.
Right.
Like she was famous in the 40s. This song was late 60s. This is very weird, like if Frank Sinatra were doing the same, like spoken word, like, let me tell you a little story. Well, is that all there is? And you could hear ice clinking, you'd think it was lazy. She has worked very hard on this song, you can tell. But I wouldn't say that this is a big departure. She's the I Love Being Here With You singer, right?
Yes.
Peggy Lee?
Or, I think
or
so.
Or is that Rosemary Clooney?
Well, hold on. Now while you're, I'm going to look that up really fast.
All right. But this is someone who had albums called,
yes, she
among
is.
Other things.
Yes, Peggy Lee did sing I Love Being Here With You. Yes.
Yeah. She has albums called things like Latin a la Lee, exclamation point. Let's Love. I mean, so I just made up a bunch of titles on my own, like while I was listening to this. It was like Lee Agonistes, like a Lee's Hot Air Balloon Concern. I mean, why not? Like she seriously has hundreds of albums and they're all named these like mid-century sparkly, like they would be pale blue with like little star stickers on it. Like Lee in Space. Like what are we doing?
A Lee's Day Journey into Night.
Yeah. I mean, Peggy Lee is kind of like weather. Like, I don't know. Like, can you say that a cloud has come back when it merely just like circled the globe and now is above you again? It's like the space station. Like, is that a comeback by the moon or is this just a cycle of of the natural order? I just didn't know what to do with this. Like, the song aside, which like this is a very sort of like I just heard of the Beat Poets and now we're gonna do a little like blank verse, what the, like shut up Peggy Lee's manager. Anyway, I didn't pass it through, but it was close. I'm interested to hear what you thought.
Is that a comeback by the moon?
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for weeks,
Sarah. I'm not even kidding. I think
don't
that
call
is that
a period. I've been here for years.
If you want to get me a wonderful present, put the phrase, is that a comeback by the moon, on a tote bag, on a t-shirt, something. That's brilliant. Is that all there is? Okay, chart facts. Peggy Lee had not been in the top 10 since, or actually even in the top 40 since Fever in 1958. So it had been 11 years since she had had a hit. And this reached number 11. Was nominated for a Grammy for Record of the Year. This version of the song was arranged by Randy Newman, of all people.
I know. Talk about always being here.
Because seriously, why not? Now, I wrestled with this. This ended up being essentially my ninth place song.
Mine too.
Yeah.
Mine too.
Because like, it's just, it is definitely a comeback. Like there's no question. But it feels like such a strange cul-de-sac in the story of her career and in pop music in general that calling it a definitive comeback hit is a little hard for me. It's like how Chuck Berry's one number one hit is My Ding-a-Ling, right? It's just like this weird thing that feels removed from everything else that the person has done. It's not like this created some new Peggy Lee essence or like suddenly everyone was telling really morbid tales of disgruntlement to a bossa nova beat. So I do respect this song as the comeback that it was, but I cannot say that it is.
I'm gonna need a tote bag in a like mid-century like Bewitched font. Morbid tales of disgruntlement to a bossa nova beat.
I mean, honestly, if I were to stage a cabaret with that exact title, would you come?
Oh my God, yes.
Okay, it's done. I'm going to make
all 10 bar. I'm into it.
So anyway, none of us, that's 0 points because the listeners did not put this song through either. But I do want to acknowledge that the world is a better place for the weirdness of Is That All There Is having been a hit song.
I agree.
Now, next,
It wasn't me.
I will say we're not talking about the comeback of Mr. Dusson. It is the comeback of Shaggy that we're discussing here, because he had had a hit with a song called Boombastic in 1993 and then kind of vanished from the pop scene until 2000, when It Wasn't Me reached number one, and then his follow-up single Angel also reached number one. So suddenly he's like bigger than ever. Yeah, Sarah, It Wasn't Me.
It wasn't me who voted for this. This is one of those that, like the Peggy Lee, it clearly qualifies, but if we have to sort of make the case that much for it, in it, that it's like academically it fits, but emotionally nobody's responding to it. Sometimes that's how it goes. Also, I feel like I've been hearing this song for 3 years because it is now in Discover Card commercials where they're talking about how if there's unauthorized charges, you'll never have to pay for them, while It Wasn't Me is playing. And I just am very happy for everyone involved for securing that bag, because it was playing nonstop during like baseball, the US Open, like great. Everybody makes some money. But I wouldn't have thought of this first or 15th or 50th. Like I acknowledge that it qualifies, but I had to put some things in the bottom half and this is there.
So here's a story about my relationship with It Wasn't Me. When this song was reached number one in early 2001, when I was in my senior year of college, I was the RA of this thing called the Spice House. It was a house for international students and cultural students, like people who were majoring in weird arts things. It was a really fun place to live. And we had a prom in that at the end of each year. And I remember knowing that the prom was coming. And in January, I was like, oh, this is going to be a really good song for the prom. But 4 months later, by the time it was time to have the prom, nobody could stand this song anymore. So it was not played. So I just think of this song as one of those examples of, it's like everywhere for like a really tight period of time and people like it, and then they suddenly cannot stand it anymore.
They turn on it. Totally.
But that being said, because it was such an out of left field hit but it really has hung around in the ways that you just mentioned, and it did precipitate a second number one by Shaggy, which is Angel, which is just a terrible song, but we won't get into that. I did put it through, but I am the cheese standing alone because neither you nor the patrons did. So it's but 2 points for Shaggy and Mr. Dusson. But that's all right. I'm happy to vote for it this time. And I understand that this is the end of its road, and I'm fine with that because I don't ever need to hear it again.
Fair. I'm not sure how you feel about hearing Nelly's Just a Dream again, but I do have a clip. This one I really kind of wrestled with because I wasn't aware, I don't think, that this was a comeback hit until it showed up in this list. But I also wasn't aware that it was a Nelly hit, which suggests to me that it's like better qualified as a comeback hit because it's a slightly different sound. Like once you know it's him, you're like, oh yeah, I hear the like country grammar
right
DNA in there. Anyway, here's a clip. See a pretty face, run my fingers through her hair. My love, my life, my shawty, my wife. She left me, I'm tight. Cause I knew that it just ain't right. I was thinking about her. This isn't a bad song. This is another one that I would put in the Imagine Dragons bucket, that it's like, is this a great song? No. Is this begging to be licensed for like interstitial throws to add during the baseball, like the first round of the baseball postseason when someone has just been eliminated? It was only just a dream. Like, okay.
Fine. Or if the Serta mattress people need a new commercial, why not use this song?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like weighted blankets. Not My Pillow though. Fuck that guy. Yeah, I did struggle with this, but in the end, I didn't put it through because I think that there were like academic, intellectual arguments for it. But I also don't think it sounds like once you realize that it's Nelly, it doesn't sound quite different enough. They're like, oh, this is Nelly trying to make that Imagine Dragons paper on ESPN2, like, which is fine. Again, good for you. Get the paper. But it's, yeah, there were just ones that I thought were comebackier in this section. So it didn't go through for me. What about you?
It didn't go through for the listeners either, but it did go through for me because I just remember being so delighted that Nelly suddenly had come back after 5 years without a top 10 hit. I just really like this song. It hits my pleasure spots. Mm. Oh, that sounds gross, but you know what I mean. In a way that
it's a nice vocal. Yeah. It's a nice vocal.
There's real wistfulness in this song that I enjoy. I like the music bed of the song. I think I think it's really good. Also, the music video is so good. If you haven't seen it.
It is really good.
Like all of those cool effects, like that giant eyeball floating in the sky and shit.
The floating car. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It doesn't try to do too much. It just does the things.
And the reason that this song is always going to be stuck in my mind as a comeback hit is I can't find it again because I looked for it. But I absolutely read an article at the time with one of the songwriters who was talking about how other people told him, do not work with Nelly. He's over. And this guy was like, shows you, motherfuckers. Yep. Here we are.
Challenge accepted, bitch.
And so I just feel like any song that is stuck in my mind as a song that someone made against all odds and it became a hit, that's a comeback hit to me. So that's why I gave it 2 points. Again, I am the cheese standing alone. So Nelly, though, much respect for this one.
Yeah. And I enjoyed being reunited with it and learning who it was. Like, there's a lot of songs in this particular quadrant that it was like, oh, I know this song. Oh, that's such and so. So
right, totally.
The more you know. I didn't clip our next song,
oh, thank
Kokomo,
God.
By the Beach Boys, because Aruba.
Ooh,
etc.
I will say I did listen to this song more than once in preparation for this episode, even though if you go back in our archives, you can remember that both you and I likened this song to the aural equivalent of The Plague.
Yeah. 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 It's like if someone poured a flat Dr. Pepper in your ear, basically, in one ear, and then like Malibu in the other ear. It's a lot. And I mean to tell you, this song was playing either on MTV and or on the radio every second for what seemed like a decade.
It's one of those songs I have very clear memories of people singing it around me in elementary school. I was singing it. It's a chant song. Mm-hmm. So kids like chants. John Stamos was in the video playing the mm-hmm. drums, which just made it even more appealing for younger people who liked Full House. Mm-hmm. You could not fucking escape Kokomo. And it was co-written by John Phillips. So it also meant that the Mamas and the Papas kind of got in on the 60s groups getting to do it one more time.
Yeah, getting the 80s. Yep.
To me, there was no question that this was going through, despite the fact that I do not like the song, because it was such an inescapable return for the Beach Boys at this time.
Yeah. We knew it was a big comeback then. I mean, I guess you could argue that we should be talking about Wipeout, but we're not. We're talking about this, like it or not, and we don't. But yeah, I waved this through without thinking about it much. I did listen to the song again. I was struck by how much better this song should be. Like,
right,
the performances, the vocals should be better, because the song as constructed is quite cynical and rather lazy, but I feel like the performances shouldn't be that. We deserved better given how this song invited itself over and then ate the last everything in the house and then finally left.
Well, you know, going back to what we were saying about the doctor having the cheesiest accessories first draft lyrics. This is also that. It's like, oh, I need the Sandals Resort Company needs a commercial. I have 15 minutes. How about this? That's what these lyrics are like.
Yeah. Here's some puka shells. Start the clock. What did the listeners do?
Well, they also put it through. I think that no matter how we feel when you're talking about comeback songs, we all had to acknowledge that this one has to be considered. I mean, I just want to say a lyric I had blessedly allowed myself to forget was Martinique, that Montserrat mystique. No. Please don't.
Please. Please don't. Because we are, after all, living in America. And I am going to play a clip of Mr. James Brown.
Yes.
I was very tempted to just play the opening. Ow! Bump, 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 ba-da, because do you need any more? I mean, to identify it, no. To live a happy life, I think you do. Here's a clip. This song, I mean, this is one of those songs that it's like, do you actually like the Weird Al version better? Living with a hernia? That's fine. It's very close, but like, this is excellent James Brown content. I also am very familiar with it because I have seen Rocky IV more than any other Rocky. This figures into it heavily, including Apollo Creed wearing like shiny sequin boxing shorts. Never going to be mad at that. Is this his best work? No, but as we wrap this up with a 60s to 80s genre piece or subgenre song, I have to admire how well he stayed James Brown and did James Brown branded things, but in an 80s enough way that like he understood the assignment.
Right.
And he looked at the check and he was like, what is expected of me? What are the proportions of essential soul dance break to 80s synthesized? I need like 15 backup singers, all of whom, like each one has a more splendid Jerry Curl than the last. What are my proportions? Like he knew what was needed. He delivered it. I can't not chair dance to this song. My only objection to it qua song is that it does sound a little cheap. Like the mix sounds a little shallow to me sometimes, which I think is not great because it's James Brown and there's a bunch of horns and you should be able to make that sound good. It shouldn't be that difficult. It's fucking James Brown. He did 99% of the work. All you had to do was like normalize it on the export. Jesus Christ. Do I have to do everything in this culture, for God's sake? I'm joking. Mostly. I did pass this through because I think this may have been like James Brown did not get like classic rock radio airplay really, except for I Feel Good. Like nobody listened to anything of his kind of.
Right.
Or nobody played anything of his on classic or like rock, classic rock radio. So if you wanted to sort of go deeper or get a broader sense of why he was important and why he was called the Godfather of Soul and why people gave a shit about him, this was actually closer, I would say, to his general oeuvre. And it had been a while, I think, since they'd done much. And this did pretty well. So I'm going to turn it over to you for chart facts, but I did pass it through. I might be the cheese, though.
There are so many chart facts on this one. It was one of two massive hits from the Rocky IV soundtrack because Survivor's Burning Heart was also on this soundtrack.
Awful.
But like Rocky IV, man, coming at you with the Rocky sequels really delivered a lot of hit songs to the culture because obviously Eye of the Tiger was on Rocky III.
Yep.
This song reached number 4 in 1985. That is the second highest chart peak on the Hot 100 for any James Brown song after I Got You peaked at number 3. It was his first top 10 on the Hot 100 since Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud in 1968. So that's a 17-year gap. And his first top 20 hit on the Hot 100 since Get on the Good Foot in 1972. Oh,
yeah.
I love saying that title. And even on the R&B chart, where James Brown was much more of a presence, he had not had a top 10 hit since 1976 or a top 20 hit since 1979. So even in his core genre, it had been almost, it's been 9 years since he'd had a top 10 hit. So this is absolutely a comeback song. I think I'm probably wrong to have not waved it through, but the patrons did. So that's four points for Living in America.
Interesting.
So this puts us in an interesting situation at the end of the episode. This time we have nine songs and we have room for eight. So unlike last time when we had to cut several, this time we only have to cut one. But I'll tell you up front that we've got three sixes again. That's Got My Mind Set on You by George Harrison, I Do Anything for Love by Meatloaf, and Kokomo by the Beach Boys.
Oh, God. Jesus. Well,
now the only,
this is the life we have chosen.
The only one of our fours that the patrons did not vote for was I Found Someone. But I need to say, I think that we're right, and I think that we should keep I Found Someone.
All right, so what are the other fours?
Okay, here are our other fours. Give Me One Reason, Handle With Care, I Found Someone, I Just Called to Say I Love You, I'll Never Love This Way Again. Oh, no, that the patrons didn't vote for that one either. And Living in America. So we could cut I'll Never Love This Way Again and still be keeping up with our typical pattern of letting the patrons' votes carry a little bit more weight in this part of the competition.
Yeah, I think that, I think cutting I'll Never Love This Way Again is okay with me. I don't love it, but I also feel like, you know, as things go, as things continue in the competition, like if they, if it wasn't getting the votes from the patrons before,
it's definitely,
it's probably not
going to
get them going forward. Yeah, and I would rather keep Cher in the mix, and I do think Dionne Warwick is more of a, like, maybe a more of an edge case than some of the things that they did vote for. So I'm content with having gotten to tell my story of acting out this song whose lyrics I did not apparently actually know, and being interrogated on my presentation before I'd even gotten to school. Having told the story, I'm content to let this song go.
Well, and I'm also, in last week's episode, not, it seemed like maybe not all of your picks got through, but seven of your choices in this round did make it through.
Yeah,
so,
shocking, shocking.
Our top eight from this round are Give Me One Reason by Tracy Chapman, Got My Mind Set on You by George Harrison, Handle With Care by the Traveling Wilburys, I Found Someone by Cher, I Just Called to Say I Love You by Stevie Wonder, I Do Anything for Love But I Won't Do That by Meatloaf, Kokomo by the Beach Boys, and Living in America by James Brown. An interesting array of hits.
I'll say, and we could not choose this array, as we've been saying, without you, listeners, Patreons. Thank you so much for listening and for voting. And if you also want to get in on the voting, there's a whole bunch of rounds. The scoring changes in the future. So I think you should get over there, patreon.com/mastass. That gives you access to our Discord, which is a fun discussion space. We're playing a music league right now. It's getting kind of insane. We're doing like a school-themed thing, and we're on the shop elective as you're listening to this, and it's deranged and super fun. So you should come and check that out. And you also get these episodes a little bit early and with no ads. So if that is something that you enjoy, don't feel like fast-forwarding in the middle of that ad, then come and check us out. Again, patreon.com/mastass.
And remember, you're allowed to be a patron even if you're not living in America. and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Sarah D. Bunting and Mark Blankenship. That's me. And edited by Sarah D. Bunting.
That's me. This podcast is a proud member of the Bleav Network. Learn more at BLEAV.com.
And if you want to talk about songs, suggest a season theme, get a pop chart reading or customized playlist, or have a cocktail with us and your fellow listeners, then come on by our Patreon page at patreon.com/mastess, where you'll find polls, happy hours, and tons of extra episodes and content.
We're also at Talk Songs on Twitter, at Mastass Everywhere on Instagram, and mastass.podcast on Facebook. Or just email us, talkaboutsongs@gmail.com. All that contact info will be in our show notes. Scroll down. Hope we'll be talking about songs with you soon.
Thanks for listening.